This episode of the If I Had One Wish podcast with Vicky Fox was recorded in February 2025. On the 26th of August 2025, we tragically lost Vicky. Her passing has rocked the sector, with so many colleagues mourning the loss of such a passionate and kind advocate and friend. Vicky gave so much of herself to the causes she was passionate about and has left a lasting legacy in her work ending homelessness and making the world a better place for women. In this episode, she generously shared her reflections on how her own lived experience of homelessness enabled her to help others. She brought warmth, courage, and unwavering compassion to everything she did through her work with Sirenians, Crisis, the Homeless Network in Scotland, and St. Martin's in the Fields. I hope in some small way this episode is a lasting tribute and fitting memory to our wonderful Vicky. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the If I Had One Wish podcast. I'm Crystal Hicks, and I am your host for today's podcast. I'm delighted today to introduce our guest, Vicky Fox. So in her day job, Vicky is Policy and Participation Manager at Sirenians, a charity supporting people who are experiencing homelessness in Scotland. Vicky is also a trustee of St. Martin's in the Fields and the national homelessness charity, Crisis. Vicky's got a 22-year-old son who she spends a lot of her spare time with, watching Marvel and Doctor Who. Bit of an insight into your personal life there, Vicky. She also enjoys traveling, meals out, walking, and a good Netflix binge. I mean, who doesn't? So it's lovely to have you with us today, Vicky.
Thank you, Crystal. Yeah, I'm really pleased to be here and that you asked me to come along to the podcast. So thank you.
Super. So Vicky, you and I both work in the world of housing and homelessness. And I'm always really intrigued to know a bit more around how women end up in this sector. So can you tell us a bit about your career journey and how you ended up in the sector?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a bit of a long story, so I'll try and keep it as brief as I can. I experienced homelessness myself, so I was in and out of homelessness over a period of about 15 years. I spent time in temporary accommodation, so in a B&B in Edinburgh and female-only supported accommodation, but there was also a lot of sofa surfing. I stayed with my family, my mum and dad, staying with friends on their sofas. There was a lot of other issues surrounding it, so domestic abuse and mental health, and yeah, had a lot going on. So I first became in touch with the organisation I work for, Sirenians, probably around 9 years ago now, when I was living in supported accommodation and came along to one of the cooking classes. So I attended the cooking class and started volunteering once that was complete. And then the opportunity came up for the cooking tutor role, and I went for that, and that was me. And so I've worked for the organisation ever since. It's been around 7.5 years. I've been employed by Sirenians, but volunteering for a couple of years before that. And I've done various roles within the organisation, but I've loved every one of them. You know, there's been a lot of change in roles, and COVID came along, so I changed roles then. We obviously couldn't continue with the cooking classes during COVID. I then managed a cohorting centre for people who were symptomatic or had a positive COVID test, and I managed our private rented sector pilot work, which we ran in partnership with Crisis and the Simon community. And now I've got a split role, so I'm policy and participation manager, but I also manage our recovery housing.
Oh, right.
So for people who are trying to remain abstinent from drink and or drugs, and we're looking to but are in the process actually of opening a women's recovery house. So that will be for women who've gone through the 12-week residential rehab program or an alternative residential rehab program that don't have anywhere to live. So we'll be providing accommodation for four women, along with support and a lot of wellbeing activities around that. So I think in summary, my lived experience is what brought me into the sector. I've seen an opportunity to sort of use the knowledge that I'd learned through my own experience, but also experiences of peers and people around me. It's just such a rewarding role. You know, as I say, every role I've had in the organisation, I've just absolutely loved. Work with really amazing people. And I think having that split role as well, although it can be two quite different headspaces. I love the fact that I can do the policy work, but also I'm doing the direct service delivery work as well. And I don't think you get the opportunity to do that in a lot of organizations. It's generally one or the other. And I think it's a really unique role I've got that I get to do a bit of both.
Yeah. Thank you, Vicky. I mean, I think, you know, your lived experience brings a whole different dynamic to that type of role, doesn't it? And it can be a really sort of helpful thing when you're working in the roles that you do to have that experience to draw upon. It's a really challenging sector to work in. It can be really demanding physically, emotionally, mentally. As a mum, you'll have lots of other things going on in your life as well, I'm sure. So what makes you sort of stay in the roles? What makes you sort of get up every day and think, actually, I'm still motivated to do this despite the fact that it's really hard?
It boils down to the people. You know, I've got some great colleagues, and I think you see it working. You know, I can't really speak to a lot of the other parts of the charity sector, although I'm sure that you'll get that, you know, across sectors. But within homelessness, it feels like such a community, you know. So when you go to events, it's the same people a lot of the time, you know, that you see. You build up really strong connections and collaboration and partnership work with other organisations, which I absolutely love. And it still feels like there's so much to be done. So in Scotland, we had the housing crisis, housing emergency declared last year, and it feels like there's always a new challenge and always something that keeps you going forward. I also think that part of my role as policy and participation manager is Sirenians co-facilitate the All In For Change team with Homeless Network Scotland, and that's a group of people with lived and frontline experience of homelessness. So we meet, you know, monthly, sometimes it's more than monthly, and we're funded by the Scottish Government to be a bridge between homelessness and related policy and what's happening on the ground. And I think, you know, that that's a really good reality check of what's happening, what still needs to be done. But you also feed off the passion of everybody else and the determination to not just talk about what needs to change, but actually push for the changes to be made.
That's really interesting. I think just to pick up on something you said there around sort of your colleagues and around collaboration and partnership. And I speak to a lot of women, as you can imagine, as president of Women in Social Housing, and they always say, oh, I would love to be able to do more to influence change, but I haven't got time. You know, I've got this day job and I've got the family and I've got, you know, all of this stuff going on. And, you know, actually just bringing that right back and saying, through being a really effective partner, collaborator, by being a genuinely supportive colleague, you are making a difference. So you're making a difference from where you are. So it's not always about having to, like, you know, go out and take on all of these additional things, but sometimes just thinking, actually, how can I really effectively influence from where I am in this role is a really good bit of sort of advice.
Yeah. And I think so, as part of my role as policy and participation manager, and we do a lot of sort of organizational internal work. So whether that be responding to consultations or trying to get our own sort of policy positions, and it's so valuable to be able to help create a space where different parts of the organization and different teams who are frontline workers who don't generally have the time within their day-to-day jobs because they're supporting people back to back. You know, it's people who are in crisis that need that support and they need to be there. but to be able to take an hour or two out of the week, you know, maybe every couple of months or something like that, and for us to be able to listen to what's actually happening, then that's doing something to change the system, you know, because we use that information and that gets fed back to Scottish Government, or we talk about it in any forums that we're at, if we're at meetings or we're meeting with any sorts of officials or local authorities, we use that information. And I think it's so important to have those links, because otherwise that information's lost. People feel like they're battling every day and can't do anything about the sort of the structure and making any changes further upstream. It's just about dealing with the here and now. And so any way that we can make some sort of platform to be able to hear the views and to do something with them, I think is really important.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to pivot us a little bit into talking about your other roles. So you're a trustee of St Martin's in the Field and of Crisis, the organisation that I work for. So I'm really intrigued to understand, like, how did you become involved in these organisations?
Yeah, so I mean, I think with Crisis, I've been on the board for 6 years, so I'll be coming to the end of my time shortly. And I'd been a Crisis member, so I'd been, while I was experiencing homelessness, I'd been along to classes. I had a smart skills tutor there, and I obviously started working for Sirenians, but was still in touch with Crisis. And the opportunity to join the board came up, and I think that it happened quite organically, really. So Crisis at that point were really keen to get somebody with lived experience on the board. It was a gap that had been missing, I think missing for quite a while. It was, yeah, something that they really felt was necessary. And it's been, you know, it's been such an amazing journey. So from when I joined, there was work going on with Crisis members. There were sort of members forums, some work with experts by experience, a sort of panel, but it's just gone from strength to strength over the 6 years. So we've now got a really successful experts by experience panel that meets regularly. We've also got our lived experience advisory board, which I sit on, and that reports directly into the board meeting. So the lived experience advisory board will meet before the main board, will look at the papers and any sort of queries or questions or feedback can be fed up to the board, but also Crisis Chief Exec Matt, he sits on the board as well, so can hear any concerns and anything raised directly, as well as other members of the leadership team. So it's been so rewarding. I've had the chance to buddy with a couple of members from the Lived Experience Advisory Board, and we're going to start recruiting for new members of the Lived Experience Advisory Board shortly. And the current members who've been in place for the last 2 years, whose time is coming to an end, have been so pivotal in helping to shape a programme so that there's a proper induction. People are coming on to the Lived Experience Advisory Board with all the information that they need and feel well equipped to be able to join a board, because it's maybe something that they haven't done before. And I think it can be quite daunting, you know, it can be really daunting.
Yeah, I think, you know, it can be so daunting, can't it? I think especially for women, and you can think about all the things, the skills and experience and things that you don't have as reasons, you know, not to get involved on a board. So, you know, you've been on the Crisis board for 6 years now, so you're a really good person to comment on what actually is needed, what skills, experience is needed to join a board. So I'm just interested to hear, you know, what do you think is really important to have?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think having a good mix is always really important. So I always say nobody can be an expert on everything. So you're coming along, you know, you maybe feel like you've not got enough financial expertise, you don't know enough about marketing, you don't know enough about fundraising, you don't maybe know about service delivery or policy. One person can't be an expert in all of these areas, but, you know, I think that everybody's got something to give, and it's about, is there a gap on the board that needs to be filled by your knowledge and whatever that is. So, I mean, when I applied, and I've been on the board of St. Martin's for the last sort of 5 years, and again, there was a gap on the board in terms of lived experience and frontline worker experience. So it's about making sure that the board is diverse as it can be, with different knowledge specialities, I guess, but also personalities as well. I think having, you know, people that are going to have difference of opinion but can resolve the differences well and professionally. You know, I've yet to be on a board meeting at either organisation that there's been arguments or any real conflict. You know, there's difference of opinion, but I think that's healthy. It's healthy to be able to challenge decisions that are being made, or to question things, to give your own viewpoint. And I think it's in terms of what's important skills going on to a board, I really think, apart from all of the knowledge and expertise that can be learned, I guess, it's also about the softer skills. So being able to listen to others' opinions, being able to work well, and not being afraid to voice your own opinions, but also having the time to prepare and read through papers and to be able to, I guess, understand them, and being aware of the time commitment, because it is a time commitment, and the responsibilities that are involved as well. And not to sort of go into it blindly, but to do your research.
Yeah. I think there's something in that about what you were saying about what you bring. So if you look at a board and you think, oh, well, you know, that board doesn't look anything like me, and therefore I can't go on to that board. Actually, it's the opposite, isn't it? If that board doesn't look anything like you, then the chances are that you are the type of person that that board needs to bring that diversity. I want to talk to you a bit about homelessness. We can't have you on the podcast with all of your experience in homelessness and not talk about, the current state of homelessness, really. And I really value your perspective as well from Scotland, who obviously have a different ecosystem around homelessness compared to England and Wales and Northern Ireland, which is where Wish operates in. So, what's your perspective on the current state of homelessness, and what do you think it's going to take to actually end homelessness?
So, as part of my work with Sirenians, as I say, I co-facilitate the All In For Change team. So we do road shows where we go out and speak to people throughout Scotland. So we'd actually did a road show last year and spoke to 146 people. We went to Aberdeen, Greenock, Falkirk, Kirkcaldy and Clydebank, and it was a wide mixture of people. So the majority were either frontline workers or those who had lived experience of homelessness, but there were also people in other roles such as managers and policy workers. Unsurprisingly, the biggest barriers that they identified were housing, so not having enough social housing available, or having enough affordable private rented sector housing. And secondly, it was funding. So insufficient funding, demand of services has really increased. We've seen a massive increase in demand for services, but the funding isn't being increased to meet this demand. And in fact, it's either stagnating or it's on the decrease in a lot of circumstances. So as the All In For Change team, we came up with 8 recommendations, I guess. So I'll run through them, if that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
So first of all, focus on rapid rehousing and continuing to put housing first. Secondly, taking a targeted approach to people most at risk of homelessness and working with them to prevent that. 3 is increasing housing stock by focusing on empty homes, turning over voids and getting repairs done as a priority to make more social housing available for those that need it. 4 is brokering better relationships between local authorities and the private rented sector to encourage letting to households who want to use the PRS. 5 is putting people first by making it easy for people to get the help they need, and that means more face-to-face services and greater community presence. 6, increasing understanding of data sharing rules so that this doesn't get in the way of building a system that has no wrong door for people trying to access it. 7, continue to roll out training and increase support for practice that is trauma-informed. And then lastly, it was about decreasing caseload and the huge pressure on staff working in housing and homelessness to create the space and time needed to develop trusting relationships and good vibes.
I love that. Good vibes.
Yeah.
Brilliant. You know, I think you'll get this as well, but working in the homelessness sector, people always say to me, can we actually end homelessness and what will it take to end homelessness? And I think they're sometimes quite surprised to hear that there are really well-researched strategies out there that outline how you can, that we can actually end homelessness if we focus on the right strategies, the right policies, the right funding. Yeah, which always strikes me as odd that people are so surprised that we know what it'll take. It's not that we don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
Those 8 steps are brilliant. I love that vibes.
Yeah. So as part of the change team, we have sort of 4 pillars, I guess. So they're good vibes, at home, no wrong door, and people first. So we use good vibes a lot. Yeah, try our best to create good vibes when, you know, things are feeling a bit flat and there may be, feels like there's not been as much progress made as we would like. Yeah, it's important to try and keep positive and keep going forward, but it's not always easy.
I suppose building on that theme then, so you touched a lot on those, that list of 8 things that we need to do to end homelessness around the relationship between housing and homelessness.
Yes.
And they are 2 distinct sectors, even though there's intersection between them a lot. So do you feel like there are good vibes between the housing sector and the homelessness sector? And if not, sort of, what do you think we could be doing to strengthen those relationships?
Yeah, so I mean, as I say, we had a housing emergency declared last year in Scotland, and it definitely feels like, you know, the housing sector is in crisis. You know, local authorities are under a massive amount of pressure, and there just isn't the stock for people. And I think it's important to remember that housing and homelessness works together, and we need to pull together, and it shouldn't become an us and them and a battle against, you know, third sector versus local authority, because people are like, nobody wants to be working in the front line of a local authority and repeatedly telling people that there isn't any housing stock for them. Nobody goes to work and wants to do that. And I think that, yeah, we really need to pull together and work together and look for solutions. And they might be different in different areas. I mean, they will be different in different areas. So throughout Scotland, the housing, the homelessness sector's under pressure, but there can be different solutions and actually really good practice that's going on in different areas. And we learned that when we did our roadshow with All In For Change. There's some great examples of really good practice and solutions and things that are working really well. So we won't solve homelessness, obviously, without housing, though. So we need to look for solutions together. At the moment in Scotland, we're seeing a real problem with rental properties and the housing market being way out of the price range for most people we work with. And that's seen acutely in Edinburgh. People are just being priced out of housing. And it's not just people, you know, that are having to find a rental within LHA rates. It's people that are working full time. It's just become unaffordable. So also in Edinburgh, 25% of all new developments have to be affordable housing or offer mid-market rental opportunities, which is around 80% of local market rates. But actually, you know, if your average rent of the size of property that you're looking for in the area you want is £2,000 plus a month, 80% of that is likely still going to be unaffordable. So we need to provide more housing and rental properties at a lower rate than the 80% so that people can access housing, or the problem's just going to get worse and worse. We also in Edinburgh have huge amounts of households in temporary accommodation for a very long time. And we need to not only increase the amount of social housing that's being built and that is being turned over and available for people, but we would also really like to see more affordable private rented properties and be able to work closely with the housing sector to open up as many choices and opportunities for people as possible.
Thank you, Vicky. So we're coming towards the end of our podcast and we need to ask you the question that we ask all of our guests on this podcast, and the clue is in the name. So if you had one wish for the sector, what would it be and why?
So I would say, because we're in a housing emergency, we still, however, can't lose sight of what's making people homeless in the first place. We would say that homelessness isn't inevitable for everybody who ends up there. It's often the result of a long line of preventable problems, which can often start in childhood. So we also know that homelessness can occur during transition points. So that might be when leaving prison or hospital or family home or care or rehab. It's these transition points that can often be where things fall down and people fall through the gaps. Cyrenian services often sit within these transition points, and we design those to try and catch people. So we've got a service that works in a prison with families who are visiting loved ones in prison. We've got a hospital inreach service that goes in and tries to support people who go into hospital with no fixed address. So we really try and target our services at these transition points to try and catch people. But what I would really like to see is more funding assigned to these sort of services, so these prevention-based services, as well as crisis services, which are equally as important. We can't alleviate pressure on housing services if we're not looking at what causes the pressure. And I think that preventative funding is vital in the time of emergency. So while we obviously need the crisis services to be funded, we shouldn't do that while we're ignoring the prevention services and trying to get a bit upstream of that.
Yeah. Amen to that. Prevention, prevention, prevention. Vicky, yeah. It's been fantastic to have you on the podcast. I've really enjoyed our discussion. I think you and I could go on for hours around talking around homelessness, but it's been brilliant to get an insight into that this world a little bit more. And yeah, especially to talk about what's going on in Scotland, which is a different but the same issues that we have in the rest of the country. So thanks for joining us, and thank you everybody for listening to the If I Had One Wish podcast.
Thank you everyone for listening to the If I Had One Wish podcast. Next time we'll be talking to another inspirational female from the housing sector who will be sharing her career story and what she's learned along the way. And of course, we'll be asking again the big question: if she had one wish, what would it be and why? See you next time.